Good now. Hey Lynn, thanks for joining. I don't know if you want to raise your hand,
Howdy.
let me know. But it's good seeing you, and thanks for joining the space. So today,
For sure.
we're going to be doing a little interview, a little get to knowing Angel,
Oh,
my co-founder and creative officer here at Darkport, and he's an awesome GM and storyteller, and I think it's gonna be really good for our fans and viewers, and for people on X Spaces and YouTube to really get to know you, Angel. So, looking forward to it.
okay. I'm okay. I'm gonna warn you up front, Corey. I'm probably gonna have to go about 15 till just to make sure that, because we're switching over to Restream. And I have the interview with Dragna Carta tonight.
Gotcha. All right. Well, then we'll make this a 45-minute. And I said, if you have any questions or of interest to talk and to have a discussion outside this fireside chat we're doing, then please raise your hand. So first of all, Angel, I think the first thing I wanted to ask you is, we sort of started this journey, but I really want to kind of understand a little bit more about why Darkport. Like, what made you decide to even like jump into this insane thing and do it and jump in the waters where like literally you're anachronistic, and the idea of technology 10 years ago was even like you couldn't even want to have like a cell phone. So tell me a little bit about kind of what was the decision there?
It's a fair question for sure. It's not doesn't first blush doesn't really look like a natural fit. So I blame it on Toby, who now plays Grip and was our assistant producer for a while and does still kind of help me as like a kind of a, assistant GM, at times, particularly for the Curse of Strahd campaign that we're about to start up. And he was the one who introduced kind of, I think, all of our friend group, really, he and his wife, Caitlin, to actual play. I didn't even know what it was. I just thought of it as like broadcast role playing. And it was a pleasant diversion. It was like, oh, look at people, look at what people are doing. That's really cool. But, that got me thinking about it as an intellectual exercise, because I'm always trying to do something new, exciting, different. I just, as a human, Corey, I believe that we should always be trying to improve ourselves, always be curious and investigating the world around us. And, some people, most people call it a hobby. To me, it's one of my three art forms. But this is an activity that I've been doing since I was 8 years old, So, to have a new space open up, and, it's debatable about exactly when actual play started, but really and truly in terms of like hitting the larger consciousness and gaining mainstream approval and really like weaving itself into the zeitgeist writ large, it wasn't until really like 2015 is, I believe, when Critical Role started up. And that just, and it was a perfect storm in a good sense. The planets really aligned, because you had Critical Role, you had the rise of all of the superhero movies, specifically kind of the Avenger franchise, and you had Stranger Things, all 1, 2, 3. All movements are beholden to a context. I mean, that's a law. So that really, if Critical Role had happened 10 years, well, couldn't have happened 10 years earlier because the tech wasn't there. But if it had happened, 5 years later or something, we would be having a very different discussion. So that's kind of set it.
And that makes sense from a marketing. That makes sense from a marketing standpoint, Angel. I want to get a little deeper and kind of like why. I mean, you didn't have to do it, even though there's a market
No,
here and
no.
there's this actual play.
Yeah, for sure. So I was going to say that kind of sets the table. And then for me specifically, so it was on my radar. For me specifically, it was, we talked about this when I interviewed you, Corey, that, I was playing around it with an intellectual exercise. And then like, really thinking about what, then I maybe got a notch deeper in talking with Tobias about it and, like, okay, what would that be like? What would that feel like for me as a GM? All of that. And, this is year 40 I'm going to as a GM. I'm always looking for new and exciting things to try. And, I've told you many times, I don't want to repeat myself. I always want to be doing something new. I don't know. I guess it's that inherent contradiction in me where I like the novelty of things, but I also like really digging in, 4 or 5, 7 year campaigns. Mm-hmm. And then you just grabbed on it, man. It was out of my mouth. And you were like, oh, okay, let's do this thing. And I remember the meeting with you and me and you and me and Violet.
Is this true?
Where I'm like, we're doing this, aren't we, Corey? And you're like, yeah, we're doing this. And you were like in full swing project manager / entrepreneur mode. And from there, you know, I've, you know, told the story many times, but, it mutated a bit, you know, like my vision for exactly what the material was going to be. But wanting to engage in this new space, and I haven't had a chance to tell you, I had a wonderful lunch with Patricia, the mother of my heart, my legal guardian when I was younger.
Oh, great. She's in town?
She is, yeah. She's here until January. Nice. You need to tell her she just got here, so you should go hang out with her too. And of course she has thoughts being the former vice president of marketing for Steve Jackson Games. She has thoughts on marketing, of course. She reminded me in a really elegant way to that, you know, we've caught a wave, we're riding the wave, but if we want to stay current, if we want to stay relevant, then you always need to be looking at, God, how did she put it? You always need to be looking at the patterns of the future that are forming in front of you, you know, even as you're cresting this wave. And she's right. So I've been thinking about what that looks like. And, you know, as you know, you've been my friend a long time, that's not necessarily what I would do naturally, but it, you know, she's correct.
Yeah.
So that's kind of that. Here's another thing. Like, I understand that everything in life is, it's going to take longer than you think it is. It's going to cost more than you think it will. It's going to be more difficult than you think it's going to be. Just you kind of as the general, you know, humans in general tend to be pretty, pretty optimistic about how, or even nonchalant about how easy or hard things are going to be. Like, we always think we can do it easier, you know, better than the person doing it until we're actually doing it. So I adjusted for that, and I knew this was going to be really difficult, and it's been challenging in surprising ways, but it hasn't necessarily been maybe even more detailed than I thought. Cause I don't know if we're going to get into the supply chain or not, but like the supply chain of actual play, but it's a thing, that I hadn't fully internalized when we started this. But, I don't know. I guess I've been even as you've seen, you know, meetings where I've literally just, you know, put my head down on the table and kind of been defeated. At least in that moment, I picked myself back up, but,
Well, that flows into a secondary question around that is, it's like, what inspires you? What motivates you, to continue doing this? What are you seeing out of this project, out of this company, out of this, what we're producing, in this space? What's the motivation and continued motivation and inspiration around that? Or even what inspired you to start off with that?
That's an excellent question. And it functions on multiple levels, you know, so. First, particularly post Gen Con, I mean, I feel like we were all reborn, you know, when we went to Gen Con as a company. That was just so, I had an almost spiritual experience looking out over, what's the field there? It's oil or something. But any road, as they say.
Lucas Oil Field.
Lucas Oil, yeah. Just looking out over there.
Stadium, yeah.
You know, I went from literally playing in my basement as an 8-year-old, you know, and hiding the books inside of the book covers of other things as I was trying to, you know, read role-playing games in elementary school, in the lunchroom to, and the whole satanic panic thing in the early 80s and like that, to, looking out over this, you know, Lucas Oil Stadium and seeing close to, you know, well, I mean, actually there were 75,000 people in attendance to Gen Con that year. And it's remarkable. You know, it's remarkable. How many times in your life can you say that you've seen something nearly from the beginning in terms of at least how it was impacting the larger culture, you know, and, to a massive takeover Indianapolis sort of thing. So that's one thing. And that was a huge, moment, you know, and we got there and we worked very hard to be ready for Gen Con, to execute on that, to have all, you know, all of our various ducks in a row. You did a presentation. I did way too many presentations and all of that. I'm going to be a little bit more sane on my schedule next year.
So there's
that. And then there's also the motivation also comes from having, cause it's this complicated answer. The interactions of like people are responding to these stories, you know, people are being moved by them. They're telling me this is spurring on, you know, I don't know. I feel kind of weird about like sharing DMs, but maybe I'll ask permission for it. But like, I have people writing me. It's the same thing as when I was teaching massage school, Corey. I'd have people stay after class and like, I've never told anyone this, but like, this isn't, they're sensing that I'm going for something a lot deeper. You know, I'm not going for slapstick. I'm not going for the quick sugar high. It can be hard. You know, it can be hard. I know the material is dense. I know it's not always the most, it's not always emotionally the easiest thing for people to get through sometimes, depending on what their backstories have been and whatnot. That's another thing. And then finally for myself, this has been, a huge, huge, challenge, you know, and just, to get through everything. I mean, you know, times where I've been overwhelmed by emotion on camera, all of that because of the source material, but those are all. And then, you know, I don't want to disappoint you. I don't want to disappoint Justin. You know, there's a sense.
No,
you know, that too.
It's a huge growth. It's a huge growth for all of us. And, you know, everyone grew in different ways. And, I think this is literally, you were kind of forced. So, you know, in the homebrew stuff, right? It's a little easier for you to
do what you
want
to do.
I don't say get away with, but do what you want. If you don't get to it, no big deal. Yeah. You know, it's kind of very casual. Here, it's like, I got to step up my game. There's certain things we got to get done. We want to have these mini arcs. We want to have all sorts of things that, you know, is important for the viewers and for our community to get a hold of. Yep. There's things that you want to communicate in enough manner so that, so that they are consumed and it is impactful. And, that was a great answer when you said, you know, essentially our community, our viewers, our fans are giving you feedback to sort of motivate you, inspire you to continue that. Yes, this is something that's resonating.
Oh yeah.
And we should do more of it.
Oh yeah. Absolutely, Corey. Yeah. And the pacing. So I've made this point, but I'm just going to keep making this point again and again. One of the two big, big differences between a home game and an actual play is you have got as the GM and as the players too, by the way, but mainly as the GM, you have got to be able to convey with crystal clarity what's happening because the viewers do not have the luxury of asking clarifying or follow-up questions to you. And that is, in that way, it's not that different from writing a novel, where it's not a dialogue, you know, like if you as the player don't understand something, either you can ask me a question or I can read that on your face and I can be like, oh, okay, let me plumb this out, like read the room. It's a whole different thing. You know, you're looking at a camera. It's like, there's no room to read. You just get to kind of dead reckon. And that's why getting on Discord and changing DMs and having chats and running After Dark and like all this stuff. This is why it's so gosh darn important, because that's kind of the closest analog that you can get, at least, you know, to date that I've found for an actual play to be able to have that feedback loop.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It does. And so, kind of going along those lines. So, you know, you said yourself that you're an armchair historian.
Yep.
That I think part of how you create your campaigns has some aspects grounded in that, but can you kind of describe, I know it's sometimes hard, but can you describe how the mind and brain of Angel works when he decides to create a campaign or a world? And again, at a broad stroke level, obviously, yeah. We don't have 5 hours.
Right, right.
Yeah.
As you know, did a whole presentation on Gen Con with this. At some point we should get this up, even if it's a members thing. But I always, these days, Corey, I start with theme. I always start with theme. So what is the through line of what I'm trying to convey? and everything else follows from that. So if what I'm trying to convey is the indomitability of the human spirit, you know, sound familiar, then I'm obviously that mandates that you generate a situation, you create a world, and you run a campaign where people are pushed to their limit and sometimes beyond. And that is going to tell you a lot about the conditions of the world. Okay. So are we going to run Star Trek? Probably not. A utopian society. If we do run Star Trek, it's going to be something much, more akin to Voyager, where they don't have supplies, or at least conceptually the, series never quite delivered on that. But, you know, you have to push people. If instead you want to do something like what we're doing with the Daggerheart beta, where it was a sense of wonder, then you want new things. You want things that no one's ever seen before. You want there to be mystery, but not necessarily for things to be sinister. So it's a very, and then you.
So we have Terra. I'm generally curious. So we have Terra. The initial world is built based on kind of supporting this theme. But what if next campaign is a different theme? Do you build a whole entire new world, or do you introduce things in Terra that would support that new theme?
Oh, no. Much the latter. I mean, it's a whole world, literally. So you can go to a different continent, and I've alluded to different continents, but I'm careful about not pinning myself down for a reason. And that reason is that I don't know. I have a good idea of what themes I want to do for campaign two, and I'm already setting that up. And when we run through campaign two, it'll be pretty clear, like, what I've set up, but I'm still leaving myself a lot of wiggle room because I want to see how things organically flow, in this campaign. So you have the world, but with good world building, a world can be incredibly versatile. You know, Corey, like, if we ever wanted to do a hardcore political campaign, I could do something that would be the equal of anything I did in Vampires, which is saying something. In terms of layers and Byzantine plots and everything. And we could go right on over to the capital of the empire, Fang Prime, you know, over a million people and hang out there. And those themes would be utterly different than if the next campaign was centered around the Shire, for example.
So now you're getting to a little bit more of the core of the different aspects. So there's certain things that you've decided not to include in your worlds in general, like relatively low magic, right? Or access to travel and teleport.
That'd be hard.
So I want to get to some of those themes on those, some of those choices and why, you chose to say, you know what? We're not having teleportation in this world. We're going to have, some political capital. So there will be areas for politics, obviously, even Fangy like style stuff, to what races you are going to introduce or not going to introduce. You don't need to get specific on that, but it's kind of some of the decisions around some of that. I really think the viewers and the listeners would love to kind of understand why you put some, I guess, borders in your sandbox and what's in the sandbox.
Yeah, there are two. So two quick ones. I'll try to answer this, you know, as succinctly as I can. It's a great question. It's also, you know, broad. And obviously, like you said, you could spend hours and hours on this one. Part of the advantage, I think, you know, we all bring our skill set as a GM. Part of the advantage of being an armchair historian is that, I've read about a lot of different cultures, and you kind of see these patterns. You see these flows. You see how civilizations tend to play out over the arc of history. And, you know, there are key areas, right? I mean, there's commerce, there's travel. There's warfare, there's medicine, et cetera, but there really only are about half a dozen, you know, key areas. Engineering would be another one. And because I wanted to tell a pretty localized story, relatively localized, like we're not globetrotting. This really is about a city and versus another burgeoning city. I didn't want the distraction of having, you know, and also it kills a lot of plot lines. If you have flawless intercontinental, actually technically interplanar, but intercontinental messages getting sent back and forth with no chance of being intercepted or, miscommunicated or misconstrued. So there's that. If you're talking about, if you want to have ancient world fights, which I do, and we have pretty, honestly, we have some pretty, we've even just as is, Corey, and this is just the hors d'oeuvre. This is just the hors d'oeuvres, you know, we've had some huge scale fights for fifth edition. And eventually we're going to be like, you know, legion level fights, 5,000 people fights. So if you want things to run as they did in various eras of the ancient world, you can't have things like teleportation. You can't have things like flight. You really can't have things like resurrection. You know, these are not these are things that fundamentally redefine the landscape, during a time of war. So those are all things that I didn't want to deal with cavalry.
We're seeing that right now in the real world, right? We're seeing, you know, if you couldn't get access to the rest of the world, you wouldn't have supplies or arms coming from a nation halfway around the world. Exactly. Different.
Yes. And I didn't even want to deal with cavalry. It's one of the reasons horses are so damn rare. And so you have to really control what's going into the world. And then on the other side of that, it's basically the yin and the yang here. Once you understand what's in the world, or once you know, it's like, put yourself into the position of those people. What do you do when you get sick? Who do you go to? How do you feed yourself? Is it something where you can literally just speak a couple words and everybody has magic and you have food and water and you have lesser restoration and can cure diseases and blah, 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 blah. Or maybe that's greater restoration. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? Like, you have to really get into embody these characters and think about it as the world builder. I'm speaking as the world builder here, and think, what would it be like to live in this world? There's a funny, I'll give you a funny example. Where there's this, I never read the comic, but in the show Invincible, it's an animated show, and there's a point where there's a kaiju, a monster attacking a cruise liner. And apparently this is like happens enough that there are government protocols in place for when the kaiju are attacking your cruise ship. And I'll tell you what, like in real life, if I knew that there was a 5% chance that I was going to be eaten when I went on a cruise ship, guess what industry would fall off a cliff, or be fundamentally redefined.
Yeah. Cruise lines would definitely have a whole nother way of doing things.
No, I mean, you couldn't do that. And so if you know that things like, magical gates happen, or if you know that, and this is the one that kills me, disguise self happens, and that essentially any spellcaster can make a perfect facsimile of another person, you have to radically redefine identifying people. Because how are you going to stop them from bilking you at a bank? How are you going to stop, the king from being impersonated? I mean, et cetera, et cetera. So and then what it would be like to be in that world where you can't trust people because you don't even know who the heck you're talking to. So those are like rubber meets the road. I mean, I could wax, poetic about the glories of world building and the larger stuff. And the last thing I'll say is on that is, you want authenticity. You don't need accurate. You don't like authenticity is over accuracy. So you need things to feel and smell and sound authentic. And sound real and have some truth in quotes in them, but you don't have to get, what kind of hand crank did this crossbow use? Now, sometimes I will get that obsessive just because I want to nail it,
right?
But doesn't matter like exactly what kind of bow, you went through this with Merrick at the beginning, like doesn't matter exactly what kind of bow it is and how many pounds of pull are on it and everything. I mean, realistically, yes, it would, but we're not playing a game. We're not playing old school fantasy wargaming. It's not that granular. So that's another thing
so,
you have to think about.
I think this is the answer, but I want you to confirm this or not. But I mean, not answer, but kind of overall thoughts is you, Angel, want to tell stories. There are some games, RPG games, that are more about Monty Hall, dungeon level, get more items and have fun doing sort of the superhero thing. But when you get into telling stories, you don't need high level magic. You don't need a toolkit of 1,000 things to tell a good story. No. As a matter of fact, the complexities actually add and may even distract from telling a good story. So by reducing, but the level of magic in the game so that you don't have all these complexities. It allows you to focus on the story and still have the uniqueness of having some of these items be there, obviously.
For sure.
I think it's kind of your style is to focus on the story. So would you say that reducing the complexities is kind of a key thing for you to be able to allow the story to kind of shine versus, you know, I use my magic item combined with this oil combined with this to be able to do this. And it gets more number crunchy then, right?
I would reframe that a bit. I mean, that's largely true, but I'd tell the tale this way. You need, Edgar Allan Poe, who was the undisputed master of the short story. You know, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said that every single thing that is in a short story should have a reason, all of it, every word.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that you put into a game is going to have a cost associated with it. It's going to have bandwidth it takes up in your brain. It's going to have housekeeping costs. It's one more item in the database, so to speak. And sometimes, and not all items are created equally, you get something game breaking. You have to rebalance it, and then, you know, players get mad when you destroy it or you take it away, and it's obvious you're doing this for out of character reasons, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to really weigh when you're introducing large magical items like Concord, you know, the sword that, the sentient sword that, that Donnie's character just picked up, or infamously Winter's Harvest. Allie was, you know, 1 point away from what might have been a TPK. I mean, can you imagine if she turned on Titus in a blood rage and now you'd have those two killing each other. Merrick would be bleeding out and it'd be, you know, basically, it's a very, very bad.
Potentially.
Very bad.
When the sword takes over.
Really bad situation there. You know, you really want to hone in. It's like, is it more interesting to develop Nalishly's relationship with Winter's Harvest and have this kind of bizarre, helpful, but also abusive, you know, back and forth? Or do I worry about the seventh magical item that she has on her person? You know? To me, that's a no-brainer. No shade on people who want to, you know, if you want to have, you know, and the counterpoint to this, and my best friend in high school, Bobby Goodson, made this point about playing Marvel, because I liked a very controlled, kind of smaller cast in Marvel. And he's like, part of the joy of the Marvel universe for me is so many people to see, so much to do. I totally get that. And if that, you know, and that has value. Just for me, you're right. I mean, like my style, but it's very focused. I want to be really focused on the story that I'm telling, because it's so easy for things to devolve into chaos. So that's a very succinct, and there's a lot more I could say about that, but that's kind of the quintessence of that.
And it's even more critical when you go to live stream on top again, the RAM, you said, to be able to keep that in your head and all these rules and processing, it's just, again, in the stream.
I'm running a home Curse of Strahd, as you know. It's wonderful. You know, it's been 2 years since I've been able to run a game for my father who loves gaming. So it's wonderful to be able to game with Dad again. And, I had this moment where I had to look something up in the Curse of Strahd book. And I was like, oh yeah, I can do that, can't I? Cause I was like scrambling in my head. I'm like, that's right. It doesn't matter. I can just stop play for 2 minutes and read something, you know?
Yeah.
You can't, it's not ideal to do that. I'll put it that way. It's not ideal.
No, you know, 10-15 seconds is fine. Right. Anything more than that, it gets a little laggy for viewers. Yeah.
And people just, you know, they do it. A bunch of friends are gaming, you know, you chat and you make small talk, or you talk about your characters, or, you know, you crack some jokes, and then the GM's like, okay, all right, you know, and you dive back in. You know, the pacing, you know, the other huge difference about streaming, of course, is the pacing, and there's a whole, you know, that's a whole discussion. But I mean, I'm always aware of the clock, like literally and figuratively aware of each precious moment. And we have to, you know, you've played in my home games extensively, Corey. You've played in the streaming games now extensively from the very beginning. You know, I'm sure you can feel the difference between the two.
Oh yeah, there's a big difference there. So, what would you say is Angel's superpower as a GM storyteller?
You know, I don't like bragging. I always think I kind of no. There's always so much to do. Like,
but everyone has a superpower, even though they may not know it or admit it. So it's not bragging. It's just identifying what is that one special sauce that you bring to the table. And other people might have it, but it's what you specifically, you know, are really good at, natural at, focus on. So I don't consider bragging.
I think that, I mean, you know, cause I'm, you know, I'm watching the GM of our sister stream, Alex, do 20 different frickin' things, you know, on a stream and make it look effortless. And I'm just like, you know, he's a, you know, 95% one man show over there. And, you know, Morgan, you know, usually runs the chat or whatever. And, is equally brilliant wife, you know, Morgan usually runs the chat. I think, you know, if I was going to claim anything, one thing I have noticed is I think I bring both it's funny because if you'd asked me this a year ago, I would have had a somewhat different answer. I think I bring a psychological depth, and part of that is just being older. Part of that is having been, you know, a bit obsessed with how humans work. And I'm, and my relationships are more important to me in my life. My relationships with other people and with myself are more important to me than anything else. They're more important to me than money. They're more important to me than power. They're more important to me than travel. You know, a lot of people value many, many different things. There's 8 billion humans in this world. And for me, it's my relationships. And as a natural outgrowth of that, I really have made a study of humanity. And the way that that shows up in the stream is I think that I have a knack for keeping things real. And even in a 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons is, you know, as we've talked many times before, is not really our natural habitat for either you or myself as gamers. It's the era of the protagonist. It's not really the backdrop you and I grew up in, so to speak. And so to take that, which is essentially a game about superheroes, and to make that, you know, I'm not making it fantasy wargaming. I'm still not making it, you know, you're not rolling to see if wounds are getting infected and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes I wonder if I should be doing that. But it still feels, I think, a lot more real than quote unquote high fantasy. And when
you kind of got like the boys involved, the TV series of the, cause they have emotional and psychological aspects to their characters. This is not all like, you know, all gung-ho and sit together and fight the bad guys type of thing.
And you're not always at your best, and you're not always perfect, and you're not always brave. And, you know, and the enemy is not always perfect, and they have their derangements and they have their issues. And I mean, it's the whole thing is, this leaps to mind, but like, you know, two pieces of advice I would give to that point to younger GMs is either, you know, younger literally or younger in your career is, if the players think that when your NPC is like firmly stating a position or firmly stating an opinion, that is the quote unquote right opinion for the campaign, you've probably lost the thread. Cause that's not how real life works. You know, Vale is stating, the one ironclad rule of history is that power rules. And it was really hard and I made that point so early and so hard. And, you know, Donnie has never played with me before as a GM. So it's like, you know, it's very easy to take that as, this is the thesis of the campaign. This is the GM telling you this. It's like, no, this is Lady Vale telling you this. She is extremely intelligent and she is a scholar, but that's just one perspective. And the other thing is that if you stop talking as the GM and your table stops talking, you have failed. Like, that is not the sign of a healthy table. Now it's a little different. It's different on stream. And again, we've discussed that too. And that is a challenge because the natural ecosystem that happens of side conversations and chatter and whatever in a game, in a healthy game where it's not disruptive and you're not stepping on each other, but there's just a flow, you know, there's a natural flow. You turning to Caitlin on her very first session and just starting to talk to her and that like, and her being like, oh, I get it. Okay. So we're improvising. We're just like, we're doing this thing, you know, and that fundamentally changed her approach.
It does, but ultimately, you don't want to have silence on stream or off stream, whether it's a side conversation or a main conversation. You want to keep things moving. That makes a lot of sense. The story needs, you know, and people have a lot to say and just trying to, you know, and as you know, on the table, it takes a little time for people to figure out the groove around that and the right levels and what's appropriate.
Corey, it's not a guided tour. You know, if you are not a tour guide as a GM, you are, and this is why I'm old school, and I've actually been thinking about this a lot, and I want to do a video on this soon. But from my old school perspective, like I am representing the universe. I am the, as close as I possibly can be, the neutral universe, and I am presenting you with that world.
And on stream, you got to balance that with flow and cadence, right? And the reason why I say that is, you know, I'm big into player versus player interaction and the GMs are there to represent the world story when they're for filler, right? When there's a down or they need to interact with outside of the player base. And like on LARP, for example, that was a huge thing to I didn't want to fight Monster of the Month. I didn't interact with the players and do political intrigue stuff.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, it's just, it's so different. Like, you know, in my home games, as you know, I don't like to push the plot. I really don't. So if we spend, you know, those sessions tend to be a lot longer too. I mean, they're basically twice as long as what we have on stream. And you know, if people want to meander, occasionally I'll give little nudges or whatever, but it's okay. Like, it's okay to sit in the moment. It's okay to have a, God, I mean, we had what, like 3 hour long conversations, maybe longer, in the home games, you know? And that's not only is it okay to me, it's beautiful, but that's not going to work for an actual play game. So I'm way more intrusive as a GM and like plot pushy as a GM, than I am in the home game. I don't want to just make it sound all like a negative. I mean, it's really made me grapple with my approaches to plot and get out of my comfort zone and think, okay, if we do have to have movement, and we do, what is the best way to do that? What are different ways that I can do it that make it feel real, that keep it grounded, don't feel ludicrous or out of joint with the world that we've established? And I hopefully I can look back. Ultimately, it's not for me to judge. Just like when you're an author, it's not for you to judge. It's always the reader who matters. Doesn't matter how well you've written.
It does.
You know? So.
And even as players, whether it's Randy or myself, I think about what is it worth on, need to be on stream or can it be off stream? And those calls are sometimes hard to make. And did also maybe touch a little bit on stream, but then you do a majority of it off stream because you do want the flow and we don't have 6 hours and, just the way it goes, with the on stream piece of it. All right. I want to do a little buzz round here almost.
Sure.
So I'm going to set it up and, you know, you've been doing this for 40 plus years. Angels had experience with vampire TTRPGs, with actual LARP Masquerade. For 7 years, he ran a long campaign on that with 100 plus people type of thing, 50 to 100 people. You've done Call of Cthulhu. You've done several superhero game systems. You've done several basic D&D is your favorite out of the D&D, and then 5e you've done now for sure.
Yep.
And the champions, and there's probably others, but those are just like, many. This is a nice, like, good 7 or 8 right there.
Star Trek, Star Wars.
And
War,
so out of-
Secret, yep.
The whole, oh, there you go. Star Trek, Star Wars.
Yep. Top secret. The whole. I honestly think I've played virtually every role playing game that came out from about 1975 to about 1985. Like every single one I knew of. You know, I mean, there's so many more now, right? But I tried.
Yep.
I really did.
So with that, with all
Cyberpunk.
So Angel, with all that experience and knowledge, and you're still very in tune with even today what's going on, especially with, you know, what we're doing.
I'm trying.
What system it's the closest, I'll say, to the system that you like, to use. And this is more from a, like a dice system, a game system, a rule system component, a standpoint and approach.
For what it does. So the system, again, whole different conversation. I know we keep saying this because the rule systems are the physics of the universe. To tell the kinds of story that it's designed to tell, I have yet to find a better system than fantasy wargaming, than old school fantasy wargaming. And it's confusing because there's one from the 70s and there's one from the 80s. I'm talking about the original one that has nothing to do with the other one. That's still the best. The runner up, easy runner up, very close, beautiful, elegant system is, Chaosium system is, Call of Cthulhu. I mean, it's fantastic.
All right.
Yeah.
And is it that's a fast level. Just do a time raise. The second, another question I have for you is, I would normally dig into that, but just do the time.
Yeah.
What theme, world theme do you associate to help tell your stories? Is it world darkness? Is it high fantasy? Is it, superhero, S type stuff? What is the genre or themed, game system that
my favorite
most naturally attracts you?
Yeah, naturally attracts. Yeah. I mean, my first love is always going to be English. You know, and then I discovered history afterward and I love her too, but you know, English will always be my first love. My favorite genre is always going to be superheroes. It's cause it's modern.
Yeah.
Myth.
All right.
It's modern mythology and I was like a massive myth junkie. So no.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, maybe one day there'll be a, maybe one day there'll be a dark port and I have my whole take on superheroes, which is definitely not stock.
Very cool. Well, you know, it's been great just getting to know you a little bit. And I did want to briefly touch on, just let people know that, you know, there's other aspects of Angel. He hinted on, you know, he used to teach, you know, he's taught, massage therapy in the past. He is a massage therapist, a wonderful one. And there are other aspects to him that maybe eventually we'll be able to get a little bit more into outside of just the game master storyteller component that makes up the wonderful human that Angel is. And I really appreciate taking the time kind of just getting to know you a little bit here and kind of a little bit of in the mind of Angel regarding, you know, just kind of how you approach these sort of things.
Thank you very much, Corey. And I want to express my gratitude again that you, have gone out of your way to make this interview possible, to, you know, obviously making Darkport possible, being our CEO, literally building the scaffolding, literally and metaphorically and legally building the scaffolding that the studio and the project is built on and all of that. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you want to talk about, greater than the sum of its parts. I mean, there's none of us could do this by ourselves. I mean, it's just not going to happen in the modern, super complicated world that we're in.
No,
you know, I mean,
it takes an entire tribe to build something these days, especially with so many different moving parts and complications. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate that. And so, guys, we are going to be moving over to YouTube for a little while at 7 o'clock. And Angel is going to be talking about last episode to kind of go over some of the really cool aspects and some of the behind the scenes around that. And then he's off to an interview with
I think Justin's going to be joining
Justin's
me.
What?
I think he's going to be joining me on that. Yeah. We're going to try.
Okay. All right. Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, we're setting that up.
And I look forward to that. Yep. And I'm working on the best process to get these things out on YouTube as well. I have the other one ready to go. I just want to wait till tomorrow just because of just how things are done. And then this one will come out right after that. So we'll have all these podcasts out on YouTube.
Perfect.
We'll be here also on X Spaces.
Perfect.
And so that way we have multiple areas for people to listen to. So with that, thank you again, sir. And I will talk to you later.
All right. Take care, Corey. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.